Okay, let's try this again. Ah, very good. It worked the second time. Well, greetings and salutations to you all. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all sit in front of our radios and inform each other, educate each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other a little bit. And we have some things that we'll probably talk about tonight. This week, in the first week of October, they gave out the Nobel Prizes, so probably there'll be some discussion about that. Otherwise, we're open for any kind of business. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you some new and interesting links. Okay. We're going to try something a little different. I'm trying a new domain. In the old days, I had you send everything to ac2gs.com, which was a little too much about me. The new domain is limarktech.net. Again, limarktech.net. So it's a run-on type of thing. It's limarktechnet, but it's the .net, not the .com. Okay? Well, with that in mind, if you want to reach me for any email, if you can't get me on the radio, my new email address is roy@limarktech.net. That would be for any mailbag questions that you can't ask because you can't reach the repeater during the Sunday night technical net, or if you have a technical puzzle to share with me because I love to use those. Or if you have a topic for discussion that you'd either like to discuss yourself, be part of a discussion, or just sit back and listen. Or if you want me to poke Paul in the shoulder and have him take a look at a NASA space-related story. Of course, his email address continues to be spacenetreport@gmail.com. But again, my new email address is roy@limarktech.net. We also have a new alias for the links that are available. Every week I cut and paste a bunch of articles and YouTubes that I think are interesting and that I like to share with people. The way to get to it these days is you type into your browser link.limarktech.net. The good thing is, though, this way it won't have any pop-ups. In the past, you went to my link page, and occasionally there were these weird pop-up windows. This should be pop-up free and should run rather well and rather quickly because I've set up my own in-home web server, which we can discuss if anyone's interested sometime tonight or later on. Let me drop for a second. Okay, the way to go to get to the chat room these days, you type in chat.limarktech.net. That'll bring you to the chat room. Sometimes it's active, sometimes it's very, very quiet. And as always, we're still going to stream both the Technical Net and Glen Oaks Repeater 24/7. Way to get to that is to type into your browser stream.limarktech.net. Of course, I like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive of the technical nets going as far back as September 2006. He has over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. Let me drop, and I'll tell you what we got planned for this evening. Okay, we will be requesting, as always, questions of a technical nature. I would like to have questions at the very beginning be amateur radio related, because this is an amateur radio technical net. But I understand that there is other science and technology out there, and some people are more interested in that, so we will ask people to check in, as per usual. Give us your first name and your call sign, and we'll try and take you in the order that you check in. If you tell me that you have a non-amateur radio comment or question, we may put you towards the end of the list, again, because I'd like to have amateur radio questions at the beginning. That should take us to 10:15, and I'll turn it over to Paul, WS2N, with the SpaceNet Report. And that will take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I'll return, put a bow on it, and wish you all a good week. So this is our Columbus Day edition of the Limar Technical Net. So with that in mind, is there anyone out there with any questions or comments tonight? Please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
W2BZ.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie.
WC not there, everybody.
Okay, I have Rich, I have Charlie, I have Wesley. Unfortunately, Charlie, you kind of doubled with Rich, so I couldn't quite make out the call sign. If you could give it to me one more time, please.
I'm Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie from West Babylon, Long Island.
Okay, very good, Charlie. I have you in the number 2 slot. Anyone else want to check in with questions or comments for tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2VHD, Jim.
Okay, Jim recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, nothing much heard. Wesley, I didn't quite make it out. This is going to be a non-amateur radio-related question tonight?
Correct.
Okay, very good. So I'll put you right after Jim KD2VHD. Very good. So first on our runway for tonight is Rich W2BZ. What's your question or your comment for tonight, Rich?
Yeah, it's non-ham radio. It is about your server. I would like to know how you set it up, what software you use, why you set it up, how does it work with your ISP. So I always wanted to put my own server up on the internet. I never did it. And I remember years back there was Microsoft's, I forget the name of the software, but you could set up your own server. Anyway, so when you get around to it, I'd like to know how you did it. W2BZ.
Okay, we might as well get to it now, and we'll do everything in some order. There's a lot of roads that lead to Rome, so there's a lot of different ways to set up a web server. The easiest way that I found is not to buy another computer to act as a web server, but to call a computer that I have in the house, add that to its job description. What I have is two, and we talked about this maybe a year ago. I have a lot of backup on things. I back things up from the primary drives to the secondary drives. I back them up to network-attached storage devices. And I even have my network-attached storage devices. I have two of them, and they back up each other. So, that the house would have to blow up, in which case probably I wouldn't care one way or the other what happened to the data. So I have Synology NASs. And the beauty of things like Synology NASs is that they allow different software packages to operate as servers in the background. And one of those is something called Docker, which is just simply a container. What it does is it virtualizes machines within the NAS, and it operates as a kind of isolated island. So I loaded into Docker the WordPress package. WordPress is relatively well known, and the software is free, and a lot of themes and plugins are free too, thankfully. And so I installed into Docker WordPress and a theme and a bunch of plugins, and the NAS also gives you a DNS identity. You can register with them, and they keep checking where your ISP is placing you, because I don't have a static internet protocol address. I have a dynamic one. So it's subject to change, but the NAS keeps polling to see what my ISP has given me as an IP address and informs Synology server And so the DNS, or when you type in LimeArchTech.net, it knows exactly what address is from my ISP, and it tunnels into the server and gives you the page. I could do more than one page, but for the sake of Roy's links, all I needed was one page. So hopefully, if someone out there has had the opportunity to just type in links.limeartech.net, they kind of know what's going on. And hopefully, I'll be able to keep it up. Hopefully, it won't get sluggish. It's a learning experience for me. So I hope to learn a whole bunch of things about WordPress and web servers and all kinds of fun stuff. And again, the benefit for the people who like to see the link pages, they won't be getting those pop-up windows anymore.
I've been using WordPress for about 20 years now. So you're just using WordPress for the look and feel of what people land on, right? Because as far as I know, WordPress doesn't have any server capabilities of its own. So you're just using one of the themes in WordPress, and that's what people land on, correct?
Well, yes and no. It has its own simple, basic web server. It's, you know, it's not quite an Apache web server, as far as I know. But it, I didn't have to install any other program. I just had to reconcile the dynamic names, and it logs onto to the WordPress. So, you know, I think WordPress is a little bit more than just a display for a web server. I think it has a simple web server at the front end of it.
I don't know if it has a web server. I mean, it has to be hosted. The website, WordPress is a way to build websites, but that website has to be hosted somewhere. So that's what I'm a little in the fog about. How did you get your WordPress website hosted on your own computer?
Well, again, I did not, as far as I could recall, install a separate web server. The package that WordPress includes apparently worked for that. So although you are correct that a lot of companies have their own web server and simply use WordPress as a design template, I think if you if you go individually, it supplies its own rudimentary web server, because I don't recall any of the steps included installing a web server. It was basically just installing WordPress.
Interesting. Because if I build a website, I usually build them locally, and then zip them up and shoot them up to my ISP server. So I know Apache's part of the WordPress package, but there has to be, how do I put this? There has to be some way to host your own website. Because if it was as easy as you're saying it is, why would anybody have their website hosted someplace else? Why wouldn't they just host it on their own computer? And not have to get into, how much hard drive space of their ISP they're using and being charged for. And then there's also the speed, the upload and download speed of the site. Have you tested those speeds, by the way? And I understand what you're saying about, because you have a dynamic IP address, something has to keep track of it, so when somebody puts in the URL, it'll resolve to that it resolved to that the current IP address. But Microsoft used to have Microsoft Web Server, which was another layer of software that you could do this with. But WordPress, as far as I understand, doesn't have any server capabilities in of itself. So I'm still confused, Roy.
Okay, it's good. We're all a little confused about a lot of things, but yeah, I'm probably misstating things. There is in my NAS, in the Synology NAS, a package called WebStation. Now, I didn't physically install WebStation, but it's very possible that when I invoke the installation of WordPress, that plugin also got installed, because it's sitting there in the package center. And like I said, the nice thing about Synology network attached storage is it has a lot of packages that can be run in the background. So it's probably the WebStation operating as the virtual web server. As far as the throughput, the speed of upload, download, that's really not that important to me personally. I haven't bothered to check it because I'm just using it to show people a text page with links in it. So, I mean, it could go at a snail's pace and be quite fine for that purpose. It's not a high-end website. It's a moderate one. And why would people pay rather than do it for free? Well, a lot of people don't have network-attached storage systems, so they have to rig up something with another computer. That might be an additional purchase. And a lot of people don't want the pain in the backside of having to maintain and back up and take care of a website. They just want it to be there, and if it's not working, they call irately at their web hosting company and complain, and some guy gets paid to fix it. So, this is what's amateur radio operators love, inexpensive, shall we say, cheap solutions. So this cost me basically zero, and we'll see how good zero is worth.
Yeah, that it has to be that WebStation software that turns this your WordPress site into a WordPress site hosted on your NAS. And I'm wondering if there's anything about an NAS that allows for a program like WebStation to turn it into a server. I guess there's some hosting capabilities, but after all, an NAS is hosting files, right, on your own little network at home. So I guess this WebStation allows that home network or a part of it to go out to the rest of the world. Roy, you're still there? I'm not hearing anything.
Okay, hopefully, now I'm back again. It's a matter of moving my little cursor. So if I move my cursor away from Magic Window, then pushing the button does nothing. I was saying that by design, network-attached storage systems, although I think originally were more designed for local use, as time has gone on, generically, they have options to open themselves up for remote access. So you could tunnel in with the proper passwords and information and transfer files back and forth. So I think that's standard in network-attached storage devices these days.
Yeah, so that's what's now I understand what's happening. You're building a website with WordPress, and you're hosting that website on your NAS through this WebStation routine or piece of software, and it's using the capabilities of the NAS to host stuff. And the WebStation gets it out onto the internet. So now I got it. That if I do have it, if that's your understanding of it anyway. All right, Roy, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, and also thankfully, Synology has a dynamic IP address adjuster, if you will. There are dynamic name servers out there where you can log on and inform them of what your ISP is giving you as an IP address this week or month or year, and adjust accordingly. But Synology provides that as well, so that's how I use theirs, and I aliased it to a domain that I purchased. And so, once again, if anyone types in links.limarktech.net, you'll see a nice, clean list of interesting links that I provided everyone. Any other comments or questions before we move on to the next person?
Just one more thing, Roy. I wonder if you built a robust website, you know, with video and everything else, that your web server would be able to handle it. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'm playing around and trying to duplicate another website. So far, it doesn't seem to have slowed things down. I mean, I haven't built in all of the links. I've uploaded some plugins that didn't really enjoy being installed originally, but I tried a second time, and it fixed itself. So, yeah, again, it'll be an experiment that's ongoing. I'm going to try and simulate another website entirely just to kind of test out to see how much potential it has.
Yeah, well, WordPress is one big kludge. That's what all the plugins are. You know, it's gotten very bloated over the years. The core of WordPress has stayed the same and been improved, but to get things moving and looking like people want them to look, you need all these different plugins, and so it's plugin on top of plugin on top of plugin, and that causes, you get some speed hits with that. Because of that, I mean. So it's still a nice platform for developing websites, but the big boys don't use it because of the heavy kludginess of it and all these plugins that you need to do stuff. But it's still, by the way, I think it's the number one ranking platform of all websites, they're done with WordPress.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot I don't like about it that can be changed. I didn't particularly like the text editor, but there's another text editor as a plug-in that's much more enjoyable to use. So I'm trying to keep the plugins to a minimum, what I really, really need. And plus, I'm trying to kind of mimic another website that's also a WordPress website. So, you know, using the same sort of plugins makes it easier to duplicate it. So it's much better than, I have a big book on HTML. It's only 800 pages. So writing my own from scratch using HTML is not exactly something that I would find enjoyable. So I think WordPress is something that I'll just tinker around with and see if I can kind of tweak it a little bit here and a little bit there, and I'll see how things go. But, you know, I was somewhat fascinated with the idea of having my own server, you know, sitting 6-8 feet away from me. So, you know, if I needed to, I could reboot it or what have you, instead of calling some guy who would just give me a headache on the tech help phone line. And it's free. Who can argue with free?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm trying some of these websites, and none of them is working. I see roy.ac2gs.com is coming up. Now, what would replace that? You know, there's the one that says links.limarktech.net. Which one replaces roy.ac2gs.com?
Well, just to make it easy, there's a whole bunch of different ones that go to the same place. You can type roy.limarktech.net, you can type in links.limarktech.net, and you can use the singular link.limarktech.net, and it all should land you to a pop-up free version.
Okay, you're saying links.limarktech.net, L-I-N-K-S. Limarktech.net, which I put in and I get can't reach his page. Where do I got to put www? What am I missing here?
It's limarktech.net.
Okay, I'll try that.
Is it coming up for you, Paul?
Limark, maybe I got to put limark.tet. I got this all fouled up, Roy. Not right. I keep getting can't reach this page. Nope, no matter what I put in. Thought to look to make sure I'm online.
Again, it's links, L-I-N-K-S dot limarktech dot net.
AD2DK checking in while he does that.
Okay, very good. You got a question for tonight?
Well, yes. There's a little bit of a story to it, but I'll wait my turn.
Okay, very good. Any luck, Paul? See, this was the problem the first time I tried limarktech.net. I don't know. I couldn't get people to type it right.
Yeah, this is a bit. Maybe I'm putting it into the URL, right? Or should I put it into search? Maybe that's what I'm doing.
Well, you can put it into the URL. I will check it also because Chris, K2STP, says he can't get to it, so maybe something bad happened to it. I don't know. I'll see.
K2STP.
Very good. But roy.ac2gs.com. That didn't go away. You know, that site is still coming up, doing it that way.
NY2H, I got into it. Links on limarktech.net.
Okay, thank you, Louie. I just tried it myself, and it's working. So I don't understand what everyone's having a problem with. Let me try, Chris, to try the singular, which should work. I tried the plural links, but I'll try the singular.
K2STP?
Yep.
Hi, Roy. The links work. They're the new domain name. And they go to a nice clean screen with no background or anything with the same links on your page, the links that belong there. However, none of the links work. But if I go to your old link, which is what, Kings County Radio Club, that works and the links work.
Oh, okay. I didn't try that little thing. Yeah, I got to look into it and see what the heck's going on then.
I'm going to guess that the links on the new version aren't pointing to the right direction because they're just not found. So it's not pointing to your server properly somehow, some way.
Well, you know, actually, if you left click on the link and go and open a new website, it shows the proper website. So go figure that.
Well, I can't. I'm just rich. I can't get into limarktech.net from my phone. Cannot get into it.
Okay, you have to type in something. You have to type in roy.limarktech.net or links.limarktech.net. I don't think I've set an alias for leaving the first thing empty.
WP2AH, correct.
Yeah?
Okay, I'm not much of a computer man, but I went to Firefox, which I use. I typed in links.limarktech.net. And Firefox said you can't open this page, but they had a box on the side that said open site and new window. I moused that and everything came up, and all the things on it, on that screen, opened up for me.
Satellite 2H.
Hello? Maybe it's how I'm aliasing it, and I'm masking the address, so maybe that's screwing something up.
And this WS2N, now I got, it comes up tech.net, maybe for sale. I'm going around and around. Anyway, I'll be listening for now. Back to you, Ralph.
Okay. Lou, you wanted to say something? Yeah, Chris recognized, but Lou's first. What's your comment, Lou?
All righty. Yeah, I'm doing it from my phone, and it's links.limerocktech.net. Check your spelling. Same thing. The links, if I open a new tab, it's fine. If I try to go directly from your link, what's happening is Gizmodo is blocking you. So maybe because it's seeing it's coming in from yours, it blacklisted, maybe it's got a lot of traffic, I don't know. However, if I guess you open it in a new tab, it doesn't go through your link first. I'm just guessing. But what I get when I try to do it directly is Gizmodo.com is blocked. Gizmodo.com refused to connect.
Okay, very, very strange. By the way, I did that little maneuver and opened up opened it up on another tab. And once I did that, all the links woke up, and I can just click on them and they go to their right page. So this is going to be a mystery.
T2SCP.
Yep.
Yeah, I read. It's just they're protecting their domain. You're kind of double backing. You're almost circling back to their domain, and I don't like when people do that. It could be spam or, you know, hitting website or whatnot, so they protect it. So, yeah, I see that now. If I click another box, the link then does open. But if I go back to the original page with your links, I click on them, I still get that box every time I click on it. Gizmodo just doesn't like the way you're linking to it.
Well, gee, I didn't expect them to take it personal. I don't know if there's a way around that, because except for masking my domain, there's not anything else going on there. That's probably what's going on with, you know, it doesn't like getting linked via a masked domain. So when it falls back to something else, it works better. I don't know. It's strange.
Roy, what tag are you using in the link line? Is it an href?
I think it would be counterproductive to kind of debug it here on the technical net. It's just I try to finesse it with masking the URL, and it probably doesn't like that, so I probably have to think about the better ways of handling Gizmodo in a way that they'll be happy with me. So, you know, yeah, I left the roy.ac2gs.com available. That's absolutely working the way it's supposed to, along with the little pop-ups and something. Over the next week, I will try as best I can to debug this and get it to work correctly. Worst comes to worst, I won't mask the URL. It'll look a little weird, but what the heck. Okay, well, with that in mind, any other comments, questions, statements before we move on to the next person? I guess not. Okay, Charlie, KE2AJU, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
My question was, can I... You know what's going on in Israel right now. Is it possible that I can listen to their radio with this? Roy, did you hear me? Roy?
Let's see if you hear me. Okay. I don't know. Something's a little wonky with this with this contraption, it loses my audio. Anyway, what do you mean by this, Charlie?
I wanted to hear what's going on in Israel. You know, I have a simple 2-meter radio, but they're not giving me any information on their frequencies.
Okay. You can't listen to Israel directly on 2 meters. 2 meters is point to point. So if you're lucky, except for very weird weather conditions called, ductal inversions, you're only going to be able to get to 30, 40 miles maybe. Now you can get to Israel via repeaters if you happen to know an IRLP address for an Israeli repeater, and you know a local repeater that will let you use touch tones to connect to an IRLP. Your other choices are to use Echolink. You can Echolink to an Israeli repeater, and you know there are other kinds of gateways, but just radio frequency, antenna to antenna, you're not going to be able to reach anything close to Israel on 2 meters.
Okay, thanks. Then I'll use my telephone. I'll have my telephone downloaded for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other options. There are streaming services that stream radio broadcasts around the world. So you could go look and find Israeli-based radio. There's a lot of news agencies that are full of information that's available via streaming and such. So there's a lot of avenues. If things were a little quieter and you had access to HF, on the lower frequencies, it's possible to be able to reach Israel and, reach other amateur radio operators in that area. But again, 2 meters, you're not going to reach Israel.
Okay. I'm taking the general test in a couple of weeks. I'm practicing now. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome, Charlie, and good luck. Just go over the questions, and I'm sure you'll do well. And I think you'll be happy with a general license. Opens you up to a lot of bands, a lot of phone bands. With a technician's license, you could do 10-meter, portion of the 10-meter phone band. But with a general license, you're open to using large areas of 160 meters, 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, 15 meters, 70 meters. So good luck and have fun.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you.
Okay.
Charlie, this is the WTBZ. I have a daughter in Israel, and I can tell you that on television, the best coverage is almost like wall-to-wall coverage is on CNN. CNN is just doing wall-to-wall coverage on what's going on there. So that's the best on television. And radio, you could just Google, put in the Google search, Israeli radio, and you'll get a whole list of stations that you can stream over the Internet.
Thank you.
Say again. Your amplitude is very, 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 very low. If you could raise it up, because I can barely hear you.
Too noisy.
Yeah, well, it's a combination of it's rather noisy, and he's at least something like 13 dB below everyone else. So the amplitude needs to go up, and the noise needs to go down, unfortunately. Well, we'll give him an opportunity to see if he can get things working. Jim, I assume this is an amateur radio-related question tonight?
It is.
Fine, let her rip.
So I continue to perpetrate my search for a good PL259 connector for RG58 and the smaller coaxes. I've been able to find lots of them for good connectors for the larger cables, but not for the small ones. And I was just wanted to throw it out there one more time. If anybody has found a source of either a compression or a crimp or a clamp or some improved connector for the smaller coax cables.
AD2DK.
Yes, I have found a really good source for quality connectors that are affordable. Go to Sierra Whiskey Lima.com. It's a hobby shop, and he just happens to specialize in RF connectors. And the crimp type RG58 connectors for PL259 or BNC or what have you, they're really good. I bought many, and I keep going back.
Thank you, John. Can you give me that that W5WLS? Is that it?
Negative, Roy. It's Whiskey 5, Sierra Whiskey Lima, shortwave listener.
Okay, I got a little dyslexia, I guess. Okay, I'll look at that. Jim, when last we spoke about this, it sounded like you definitively wanted a compression-based connector, which is... I've never seen one. With crimping, I think I've seen them. I probably have some in a drawer someplace. So I think it's possible. Hopefully John had the right suggestion for you, but I'm sure there are other places that you could get crimpable, RG58 connectors.
Most of the crimpable ones that I've seen are downgraded quality. I'm looking for an upgrade. I'm looking for something high end with a preferably even a sensor connector that's soldered with the on the internal, but a clamped, crimped compression, some other type of way of handling the braid. Because I'm finding with the modern materials, you just destroyed a coax with the heat trying to solder that braid. I've had no luck with it in the longest time, and there is a technology out there. I just haven't found a product. I will definitely look this up. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, he's even got the silver-plated ones. They're a little rich for my blood for what I am doing. I have bought a few, and they're quite good, but even his standard nickel-plated ones, they're pretty darn good. AD2DK, back to net.
Okay, very good, John. I think it's a little overkill, the silver. The silver would be great if you were going to solder it, because it's very wettable when you can solder, whereas nickel is impossible to solder to. So as long as you're just doing pure crimping and not soldering, you can go with nickel and save yourself the money. The big question, Jim, is the quality issue. What exactly is the quality that you'd find acceptable? It's different for different people. I certainly wouldn't kind of suggest you get, Chinese stuff, because it's kind of Russian roulette. Sometimes you get a bargain, sometimes you get not good stuff. So I would kind of stay away from China, although it's probably the least expensive. But, there is definitely a small RG58 crimpable connectors out there. Whether they'll kind of meet your quality criteria, it's difficult to say. Compression connectors are kind of different objects entirely and usually used for other form factor connectors rather than UHF, in my experiences. There's probably a couple of them out there, but they're probably designed for heavy duty type of use, and so they're not going to be used that much with RG58 or such. So I wish you good luck, and of course, please come back and tell me what you've discovered.
We'll do that. I have two really short comments to add, if that's okay.
Certainly.
So number one, we miss you. Your skill at handling a varied group of folks asking widely disparate questions and is quite extraordinary. Thank you for what you do. So I'll throw that there. And the second thing is, And a very interesting little thing happened to me about a week ago. The battery on my laptop computer exploded in my lap, and I got first and second degree burns on my legs. It shocked the heck out of me. Something to be aware of. It was charging at the time. That probably wasn't a smart idea. And it was quite an eye-opener.
Well, first things first, Chip, thank you very much for your kind words. I missed all of you as well. To the second point, I'm sorry to hear that you burnt yourself. Lithium ion and lithium polymer battery technology has the highest energy density that I'm aware of and is the most dangerous that I'm aware of, and especially while charging. They can develop a runaway temperatures, and then the lithium can ignite, and unfortunately that's, you know, a chemical fire, not the usual fuel-based fire, and so, you know, pouring water on it is not going to help that much. And I'm sure you followed in the news all of these e-bikes that are blowing up on the chargers all over the place. Chinese quality rechargeable batteries sometimes can be deeply problematic, as are their chargers. So I'm sorry to hear that you had a burn. You know, it's not the greatest technology. I'm a big fan of lithium iron phosphate, which has a slightly less density than lithium ion and lithium polymer, but according to statistics, is significantly safer. But you know, it's so ubiquitous in modern technology. You know, it's difficult to find an electronic device that doesn't have lithium ion polymer rechargeable batteries. So it's a terrible danger out there, and people should be more aware of it, and certainly, you know, try not to operate these things while they're on the charger, and you know, hope for the best. There's no definitive way of ensuring that these things won't go critical. They can go critical sitting there, not even being charged.
Good thoughts, Paul. Ironically, while this happened, I was actually doing some research on building an electric bike from like a kid. So the irony of it was pretty bizarre. Anyway, that's all. Thanks again, Roy. Back to that.
You're welcome. And maybe your laptop got jealous. I wish you better luck with lithium ion batteries. I have not had, thankfully, exploding batteries. I have had inflating batteries. I have had more than a few batteries that I guess I left them too long on chargers, in that they overheated without going thermally critical. So what you have is, you know, you pick up an iPhone, and unfortunately the iPhone is thicker than it used to be, and the two, the front and the back, are kind of separating. So I've had I had that happen to a laptop. I've had that happen to one of the removable insertion lithium ions on a laptop, where it was very difficult to pull it out, and that was because it was swelling up a bit. So I've had lots of swollen lithium ions, but thankfully no exploding ones. Anyway, thank you, Jim. Thank you for your participation and your kind words. John, I assume you have a question related to amateur radio?
I do, Roy. ADGK, thanks for getting back to me. The first part of my question was whether I was able to hit the middle island repeater, because I had to quickly program an ADGK to be able to do that. And you'll understand why when I tell my story. Press, W2PW, had given me a VHF amplifier, a very high power VHF amplifier that he needed me to repair and test for him. And this afternoon I did get it working, and was putting 296 watts into a dummy load. And sprightly me, I said, oh, well, what happens if I hook it up to the base station antenna and try to get out? So I had a little bit of a QSO with K2KNB, and midway through the conversation, the amplifier said, "Hi, Viswar, So I said, oh, I hope I didn't fry Press's amplifier. I tried it with my bass and Hi-Vis-War there too. Then hooked it up to my vector network analyzer and did a sweep, did time domain on it, saw the impedance was good all the way to the antenna. And I said, oh boy, I think I fried my antenna, 120-watt antenna, putting 300 watts into it. I'll let it drop real quick. So anyhow, I went up on the roof, and do not like 30-foot ladders, by the way. And I took the antenna down, I disassembled it. There's nothing visually wrong with it, but inside are a bunch of ceramic disc capacitors that evidently Comet would tailor and connect to tapped coils to tune the antenna properly. I'm suspecting that I severely overstressed these capacitors, and that's the problem. The antenna's resonance shifted down about 15 megahertz. So my question is, are there any subject matter experts that might know what I can do to repair this antenna? It's only about 3 months old. I did buy a replacement antenna today, so it's not critical, but I'd be curious to monkey around with it, but not fall down the rabbit hole. 82DK, back to net.
Okay, very good, John. Unfortunately, someone else was doubling earlier on with you, and we'll get to him in a moment. But I've unfortunately been there, done that. I had a GP6 as my main antenna, and we were having problems with the repeater and other things going on. And so I decided, brilliant man that I was, to use an LM250 linear amplifier on my GP6, and I blew my GP6 out. Later on, the mast holding the GP6 folded and collapsed, so, you know, it was a done deal. But so sort of I've had deja vu while you were telling me that story. What model antenna did this happen to?
A Comet CX333. It's a tri-bander. It's good for 120 watts, like I said. It's not the end of the world. I would maybe like to play with it with some guidance. Maybe I can model it in one of the antenna modeling programs. But in any case, I did order myself now a I went a little overboard, the Diamond 700, that 24-foot behemoth. So I'll be back on the air shortly, but it's a little bit of a shame that I fried a 2-month-old antenna.
Yeah, I agree. The problem with modern-day antennas in general, tend to kind of try and keep a lot of aspects of it secret. Sometimes going to the point of sealing balance and other components in the boxes that attach to them. Anyone out there know anything about repairing a Comet CX333? I'm sure, John, you Googled it. Were you able to find any anecdotal stories about that?
A negative on the anecdotal stories, Roy. The good news with this antenna is one set screw and you can pull the entire assembly out of the fiberglass. So it is fully inspectable. Like I said, my fear is with all these ceramic capacitors, which, visually they're okay. The antenna is visually okay. So my feeling is clearly I overstress them and I have parameter shift on them. There's just so many of them in there. And replacing them value by value, ignoring whatever tolerances were originally present, I don't think I'll ever be successful.
Well, yeah, I think ultimately you got to look upon this as an experimental tinkering labor of love. Whether or not you'll be able to bring it back to the same as when you bought it, I don't know. I wish there was more technical information about modern day antennas. Unfortunately, the only source I've ever found, never the manufacturer, is, you know, these intrepid fellow hams to take them apart and run them through all kinds of calibration equipment, and at least they have a good idea of how some of them work. And, you know, some of them are kind of goofy. There's a Comet has this HF antenna that's almost a dummy load. It has a ballon that has a resistor mounted inside it that dissipates something like 80 to 90% of the power, so that SWR meters reading reflected energy come to the wrong conclusion that it's a reasonable match.
Yeah, roger that. On the resistive antenna, I've seen ones that are like a twisted folded dipole, and as it twists back on itself, there's a dummy load right smack in the middle. And yeah, they present a really nice VSWR from, you know, 1 megahertz on up to whatever. You know, I think they're kind of like geared towards preppers or emergencies. In fact, when I was involved with Civil Air Patrol, we actually had one like that, 82DK, back then.
Yeah, that was a very popular military design. It's one of the few traveling wave antennas. Most antennas that we work with day in and day out are standing wave antennas that have a much, much higher efficiency. But if you go for a traveling wave, the beauty of the traveling wave is it seems to tune to everything, again, because it's so inefficient that the return power is nominal, and most SWR meters will read it as close to 1-to-1. So it gives you peace of mind as far as an SWR meter does. It doesn't give you a heck of a lot of RF in the air. But apparently military people don't need that. Most of the antennas apparently are more for the local, reaching local people, somewhat near vertical. Incident Skywave antennas are another big military antenna design.
Yeah, roger that. What we used it for in Civil Air Patrol, and I forget the acronym, but it was basically a digital transfer protocol, and the HF transceiver would be constantly checking different bands to find out which was the band that could communicate best, and would use that for basically text-based communications. Over.
Yeah. I mean, the military have different aims than most amateur radio operators. You know, we want to go as far as humanly possible. Military doesn't really need to go far. They need to stay within the area that they're dealing with. So, but yeah, I mean, traveling wave antennas are interesting. We talked about it about 6 months ago on the technical net. Beverage antennas are a traveling wave antenna, primarily designed as receivers, because as transmitters they'd be really awful.
Yeah, roger on the beverage. That's something I've wanted to experiment here. I've got a pretty decent sized piece of property, and I've been kind of wanting to play around with that. But this is one of those things that I never get around to, and well, I'm so hesitant to go into the woods because every time I go in there, I come out with ticks.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was younger in medical school, Lyme disease was an esoteric thing that attendings queried medical students to embarrass them. Now everyone and their brother is well aware of Lyme disease. So, yeah, ticks are dangerous things. Lyme disease is a really terrible disorder. But, you know, if you ever get the inclination, if you got the room, beverage antennas make great receiving antennas for the lower frequencies. Again, not anything you'd want to transmit on, but if you want to be able to listen in on 160 and 80 and you got the area to string one, you should try it. It'll be another experience.
Well, that's certainly a motivator, Roy. Not to digress too far, but the ticks as of late, I haven't seen too many deer ticks, but the Rocky Mountain, no, I'm sorry, the spotted Lone Star tick are extremely common. I haven't had Lyme disease yet, but about 15 years ago I got babesiosis, and man, New York State got involved, and they called me and interviewed me. I guess they were tracking the progress of it. Anyhow, let's keep it on amateur radio topics. 82DK, back to net.
Okay,
I was just going to say, do not ever let a Lone Star tick bite you. 82 OGB Mobile.
Okay, good, Craig. By the way, AC2.